Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and the House of Representatives has just impeached the President of the United States, Donald Trump, on two articles. The vote on abuse of power came down mostly along party lines, with two Democrats breaking ranks, one voting present, and the independent voting for impeachment. Three Democrats broke rank on the obstruction of Congress article. That makes President Trump the third president in American history to be impeached. Earlier this year, this did not seem very likely, but after a whistleblower report, a transcript of Trump's phone call with Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, and subsequent testimony, this impeachment became much more likely, and this is where we are now. In all, the House presented evidence that President Trump withheld a White House meeting and military aid to Ukraine while pressuring the Ukrainian government to investigate his political rivals, the Bidens and the Democratic Party. So here with me to discuss what got us here, how the vote played out, and what comes next are Managing Editor Micah Cohen. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
On this historic day, as we've heard all day today. Also here with us is Senior Writer Perry Bacon Jr. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
And also joining us remotely is Senior Politics Writer Claire Malone. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Galen.
Thank you for being available on the road. It's a crazy day today, but we're all together. And let me start with you, Perry, because I know you've been covering this all day and you have an article up on our site now. There was some question over how many defections there would be. What were the politics of the final tally?
So it looks like no Republican voted for impeachment, which was not surprising. We never really had any indication any of them would. In terms of the Democrats, you had Jared Golden of Maine, who voted for the abuse of power, but against the obstruction charge. He's one of these Democrats who's in a district that Trump won. So I assume there'd be some defections there. The second defection was Colin Peterson of Minnesota. He voted against both articles of impeachment. He's in a very heavily Trump district. He's a Democrat as well. And then the third was Jeff Van Drew. I mean, he's a Democratic vote against impeachment technically. He's from New Jersey, but we know that he's going to change parties. So it looks like he is going to change parties as soon as this vote. He kind of like did Trump and the Republicans bidding by being a, you know, adding to the Democratic anti-impeachment number, but that he's now Republicans. It's really like two Democrats voted against impeachment. And then finally, Tulsi Gabbard, always unpredictable, voted present instead of voting for yes or no on the articles.
And also, of course, the independent Justin Amash voted for impeachment. So not to like overhype the historic nature of the day, but, you know, it's been almost 4 years since this podcast began. We're quickly approaching our official anniversary. In the scope of the surprising things that have happened over the past 4 years, Claire, Micah, Perry, how does this rank? And I don't mean how surprising is this compared to where we were 2 months ago. I mean kind of when we set out on this journey of covering politics for the past 4 years. Claire.
It is so funny that you bring up the podcast anniversary, because I was literally just sitting here in my hotel room thinking about like the dates. You know, Bill Clinton was impeached on December 19th. It's December 18th today. I started covering Trump like 4 years ago to this month for 538. And I think just the arc of Donald Trump, you know, being, he lost Iowa and everyone thought, oh, okay, well, maybe he's not going to actually be president. And then just the memory of that, you know, that spring of the GOP primary and his just astronomical rise, Republican voters sort of accepting Trump, the GOP and its sort of the nature of the party really changing in a lot of ways over the past 4 years to become a very Trump-centric, personality-centric party. And now today to see just sort of the incredible partisanship on display during the impeachment proceedings has been really interesting. I mean, it's been a full day of kind of watching members of Congress get up there and talk about the state of America. So I think just as far as like a temperature check 4 years later from when Trump really became a national news item, that is a stunning sort of 4 year arc. And that's certainly something I'm thinking about today.
Yeah, it's funny. These are sort of the terms I was thinking about it in. I think if you told me, okay, if we go back to when Trump came down the escalator and you told me, hey, he's going to win election and he will be impeached in his first term. I don't think I would be that surprised, just in the sense that, like, Trump seemed like a very chaotic person and candidate, and not someone who had a ton of respect for sort of how things are done norm-wise or laws. And so in that sense, it wasn't surprising in, like, the full arc that I think Claire is getting at least to me. But, like, a year in, 2 years in, I had thought impeachment was basically off the table, in particular after the Mueller report came out. It seemed impeachment was impossible. And so for this to happen, and in particular for, like, the Ukraine call that's at the center of a lot of this to happen a day after Mueller testified, I think it was 1 day or 2 days later, is a stunning turnaround, I think, from that, looked at it in that time period, if that makes sense.
Perry, give us your perspective on how we arrived here after the past 4 years.
I mean, I'm still surprised election night that Donald Trump won the election. I think if we ran election 15 times, Hillary wins 12 or 13 times. So I'm still surprised about that. In terms of impeachment, I think we did a story on the site in December 2017, January 2018. I'm surprised we're here considering the Mueller report didn't result in this and another event had to happen, but I'm not surprised that Trump was impeached because I think he commits a lot of crimes and or ethical legal violations kind of continuously. So I think I sort of expected at some point it would come to this, and I think that in some ways the Democrats, it sort of was unavoidable on some level, because I think his behavior, it was going, I think I knew his behavior would at some point go over some kind of line.
You know, it's funny. I was just looking up in April of 2017, I wrote an article called Maxine Waters Isn't Afraid to Talk About Impeachment. And it's funny, like, impeachment talk has been going on for basically Trump's entire term of office. Just thinking about, like, mental signposts about this whole process. So the Republicans' line of attack that, you know, the Democrats have been wanting to do this for ages, they're not wrong, right?
Well,
that's what's so interesting about all this.
Let me push back on that a little bit, Claire. They're certainly not wrong that some Democrats, many Democrats, wanted this from the beginning.
Pelosi didn't.
Yeah.
You know, the establishment didn't want it.
Exactly. Yeah. So my pushback on that is exactly that, is that a majority of Democrats, including the Democratic leadership, they've been saying this talking point, but in the way you're saying that GOP talking point has some truth to it, this Democratic talking point has some truth to it too, that they sort of were forced into this. And I think in a lot of ways, those kind of establishment Democrats, the moderate Democrats, were.
Oh, very much so. And I think you saw Pelosi really trying to telegraph that today. She has been the person who has obviously been the face of the, we don't want to be too hasty in our efforts to remove the president from office. It's a solemn duty. And just her symbolism today, right? Her clothing. How did she dress? She wore a very dark kind of funereal suit with a high collar and a very large pin of the mace, the House mace, which is essentially like the symbol of her power. When she announced the vote on the first article, She said that the article passed. There was a smattering of applause starting to come up from the Democratic side of the caucus. And she just gave a hand gesture and a look that cut the applause off. And I mean, see a lot of comparisons on Twitter to, like, Nancy Pelosi is like your mom telling you not to do something. And I don't know if that's sexist, but it is kind of that visceral, like, don't do that, right? It's like this scolding. This, we have been telling people for weeks, for months, for years that this is a solemn thing. Don't clap at the key moment. And so to me, Pelosi was such an interesting figure today.
Yeah. And just to emphasize that point, and the idea of the kind of Democratic leadership being dragged into this, you know, by Trump's actions and then also to some extent by the politics of it. Part of the reason they were so reluctant is look, there is some political risk here. I'm actually pretty amazed that there's as little political risk to Democrats as there is, which is to say the country is pretty evenly divided on impeachment after being against it for so long. But there's some risk, and you saw Republicans, you know, beginning to place impeachment in a 2020 give us back the House message.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, if you look at our trackers today, you'll see that President Trump's approval has ticked up 2 points to 43%. And that's actually the highest it's been in our tracker since March of 2017. And then you'll also see that support for impeachment and removal is now evenly split 47-4, 47 against, whereas there used to be slight support in favor of removal. I mean, what should we make of that kind of shift in Republicans and Trump's favor right at the end, kind of the impeachment process there?
I think, particularly in Trump's approval rating, I think we have to wait a little bit to be sure that change is real. I mean, it's like, it's very new, and he's still very much within the range that he's kind of always in. But if in a week, you know, it persists, then I think, I don't know, you know, I think there are a few different ways to read it. You know, maybe kind of a coalescing of Trump's base behind him. We've also in recent weeks gotten some really bullish economic indicators. Maybe it has to do with that. In the end, though, he's still at 43%, right? You got to remember, during Clinton's impeachment, the overwhelming majority of the country was against impeachment. And Clinton's approval rating shot up to like, I don't, it was like 60.
Something like 70 at the day of impeachment.
Exactly. So, okay, that was a less partisan time where kind of more movement was, you could have more movement in a president's approval rating. But Trump is still unpopular. So like that's sort of the point, right? If Trump shoots up to 43%, okay, that's a worrying sign for Democrats. He hasn't shot it up to 55%. Right?
Okay, but to be clear, we've put a lot of emphasis on how stable the president's approval rating has been. And if you just go and look at the tracker today, you'll see that there's a pretty sharp tick upwards. But Perry, what do you think about this?
Okay, if I had a theory about this, my guess would be that we, like, impeachment, if you voted for Trump, impeachment kind of raises this question. Basically, the Democrats are saying your vote was kind of, you shouldn't have voted for him, you should be removed. And so my guess is what we're seeing is, like, you know, about 45% of Americans voted for Trump, something in that number. So getting, and I assume Trump gives me like something like 45%, if not higher, in 2020. So I think my suspicion is you're seeing, and I think the impeachment number among Republicans went from 12 to 10 over the last month or so. It just went down. So I think you're seeing some, you know, my guess is this is an event that sort of reinforces partisan lines, and therefore Republicans are defending Trump more strongly than they would have a month ago. But again, these numbers are so small, I don't want to say too much, but that's my guess. Is we're talking about Republicans aligning themselves with Trump on the removal question and also on the approval question.
All right, we have plenty more to talk about, which we'll get to in just a minute. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by ADT Commercial for Business. It's not politics as usual these days, and it's not business as usual at ADT. ADT Commercial serves businesses ranging from mid-sized organizations to large-scale enterprises. Think of them as national security advisors just for your company. They provide comprehensive security, fire, life safety, and risk management solutions, professional-grade systems for commercial-grade businesses. The Fortune 1000 trust ADT Commercial for highly complex, scalable, integrated solutions. And if you're looking for a great partner to upgrade or take over the monitoring and service of your current system, ADT Commercial can help to install and maintain large-scale and multi-site business dependably. Businesses choose ADT Commercial for their complex security solutions. Visit ADT.com/538 to learn more. Again, that's ADT.com/538. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Hims. According to the American Hair Loss Association, 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35, and approximately 25% of men begin experiencing effects of male pattern baldness before they turn 25. Some men look to procedures to help with hair loss, but those can be costly and painful. 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. With Hims, you can find prescription solutions backed by science. Dive into 2020 hair first. Right now, listeners can get started with their first month free. Go to 4hims.com/538. That's FORHIMS.com/538. Not all services or products are available in all 50 states. Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent physician through the Hims platform and are only available if approved by the doctor. Offer valid if prescribed. 3-month minimum subscription required. Additional restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information while supplies last. Remember, that's 4hims.com/538. All right, we're back, and we were just talking about the political fallout of impeachment and, you know, the president's approval has ticked up slightly. And you were saying before that, Micah, that it seemed like Republicans in the House were beginning to frame this in terms of the 2020 election. Is there any sense that today's vote, because we saw a lot of Democrats in Trump districts vote in favor of impeaching the president, is there any sense that today's vote will help determine who controls the House in 2020? Or are we just too far away? Or will these votes come back to haunt these Democratic lawmakers?
It's so hard to say. I mean, my instinct, and it's only that, is that this will not be a big factor in how most voters decide who they're going to vote for in 2020. Like, even in the moment, the political fallout seems murky and hard to parse, right? You have this kind of uptick in Trump's approval rating. Is it going to last? Is it going to prove real? Well, we'll have to wait and see. Actually, over the same time, the generic ballot has actually moved in Democrats' favor a little bit, which, you know, I don't know what that means. But anyway, if it's hard to parse in the moment, how the hell are we supposed to know what effect it'll have in however many months? So, but my guess, right, would be, guys, like, it doesn't play a major role.
I think that there's some interesting. Trump has kind of been on a little bit of a kick the past 2 days, where he's really going a little wild with the anti-impeachment lines. He had the 6-page letter to Pelosi last night. He did a rally in Michigan tonight where he said that Bill Clinton said you should whatever. He said some crazy things. So you could think like, all right, well, that could mean that he's going to get painted in this crazy light, that impeachment is going to look really good in the rearview mirror, or, you know, by the end of next year, a year from now, people will kind of have faded a little bit. I don't know. I think that impeachment, though, is going to be a centerpiece of 2020, in part because Trump sort of seems like he'll be insistent on making it one. So won't that have some impact on House races potentially?
It plays into a little bit of the framing as Trump, even though he's the ultimate insider as the president of the United States, is an outsider and is the victim in the dynamic of American politics, right? He's being victimized by these Democrats who brought this impeachment case against him. Is that what you're getting at, Claire, a little bit?
Yeah, maybe. Or it could play the other way, which is people, it really catches on in the popular culture and people say, like, geez, this guy is kind of taking it pretty far. Maybe the impeachment vote was a good thing, right? And so it kind of shakes out in the Democrats' favor.
The one thing I would say is if you're one of these Democrats in a Trump district, even if this is a net political loss for you, I think you still had to vote for impeachment because even if you're in a Trump district, the most people who voted for you are Democrats. They are going to be mad. They're going to, you know, you need your core base. You need your volunteers. You need your donors. I don't think that if you're a Democrat and, like, impeachment is polling in the 80s across the country, it's still polling in the 70s in a Trump district among Democrats. I think you still had to vote this way, even if it's probably not good for you. In the same way for Susan Collins and Cory Gardner, I think in a perfect world they would vote for impeachment. It's a net not good. Maine and Colorado are sort of left of center places, but I think they have to get the Republican vote first, and so I think Gardner and Collins in the same spot where they have to vote against removal, even if it might be better for the general electorate overall. They have to, you know, you have to have your base first, and so I think these were hard votes for these members for that reason.
It is just, I mean, it's sort of boring to say at this point, but it is amazing the extent to which party loyalty, partisanship held firm in this vote. I mean, we always knew it would. I've been on this podcast sort of like saying there's a small chance that that people could break ranks. And I still think that's right, even though events have proved me wrong at every turn. But
isn't that the definition of insanity?
No, I just think there's always been a chance.
I laughed when Micah said that because we've been saying the same things for 4 years, you know, when the hardcore nature of partisanship, right? And that people wrap themselves into the emotional or political view that their party kind of dictates or smoke signals that they should take. And, you know, it goes back to the Trump, you know, grabbing women comments, like all that stuff. It's just so, it's so amazing that it's been 4 years of kind of saying this, the same thing over and over, right? Which is, your worldview falls into likely your political party to a certain extent. And today sort of seems like, you know, the teleology of that or something. I don't know. It's just a.
No, totally. And the, like the fact that there were a small handful of Democrats who broke ranks and no Republicans is essentially, I think, simply an artifact of the fact that Democrats are in the majority right now. So they have a lot more members in red districts, right? In other words, this is all about partisanship. The other thing is just to like, it's about party, but not about party. It's like, what was Trump? Okay, so I was watching a stream of the vote, and then as they went to vote, they did a split screen with Trump's rally. What was Trump talking about while he was being impeached? I mean, he was talking about a lot of things that Claire smartly avoided trying to summarize. He was talking about how real fighter pilots have better bodies than Tom Cruise. he was talking about Hillary Clinton. But one line that stood out to me was he was talking about at one point he just used the phrase mankind, and then he added womankind, and he sort of like paused and he was like, you know, I now, and then he goes, I added womankind just so the fake news media, you know, and he points to them, you know, doesn't give me shit, essentially, and it gets a big laugh. And that's what this is about, right? It's about like culture and PC run amok, and what the word you were getting at, like the sense of victimization. How can the party see all this so differently because of that? Because it's not really about Ukraine, right? It's about, how do you feel about your place in the world? Do you feel you're respected? And a lot of the Republican speeches were getting at that. They were getting at this, you know, Democrats are trying to deny you your voice, blah, blah,
nullifying
blah.
63 exactly. million votes. We heard it again and again and again. I want to ask Perry, as we look ahead to the trial in the Senate, there's been some debate there about whether they're going to call witnesses and whether things are going to turn into something of a circus with people like Hunter Biden being called, or maybe the Democrats will try to call Mick Mulvaney, something like that. Or are they just going to skip the witnesses and have a short trial? What does it seem like at this point?
It looks to me, this based on only what McConnell has been saying, that he is not eager to have a lot of witnesses. And we might end up having basically the House impeachment managers present their case, some Republicans defend the president, and that's it. I'm guessing we're not going to have the kind of testimony we had that was pretty riveting in the House Intelligence Committee a few weeks ago. I don't think we're going to have that press. I think this is going to be probably pretty fast, is my impression. It doesn't look like McConnell wants to have kind of the whole month of January on this, but again, I don't know, and I think his strategy is evolving. There's also some discussion about there's some debate, and I don't know how, among some of the more liberal Democrats in the House about whether they should quote unquote send the impeachment articles over in the first place. I saw that there's some procedure in which they could impeach Trump but not have the articles go to the Senate because it sounds like, because they want to try to push for a real trial, and McConnell's already said he's not going to do that. I think these process questions are a little bit ambiguous at this point, with the key thing being at this point we don't have a lot of evidence there are really any Republicans for removing the president. And if maybe Mitt Romney is for it, I think we're still at least 20 short. So I think that the results are clear, but the process maybe isn't clear yet.
I don't know, Perry. We should wait and see.
Oh, there we go. Classic Micah. It's obviously becoming a joke at this point. But, of course, we'll get back to that at the start of the new year when this all heads to the Senate. But wrapping up here on a more reflective note, I'm curious, how does this history in moment get written, and who decides how future generations understand what happened today, especially given the split screen nature of how different parts of the country, different people in the country are viewing things?
It'll be 2020, right? It'll be whoever wins in 2020 writes, not only gets an outsized voice in writing the history of this, but that will also, for the media, certainly, whether it's true or not, play, you know, determine whether this was a quote unquote good move by Democrats, right? If Trump wins re-election in 2020, I think the media will write that impeaching him was a bad political move.
Although that didn't necessarily hold up in 2000, right? Because Republicans impeached President Clinton, and then a Republican went on to win the 2000 election, even though people generally think of that impeachment as not having been on the most solid of ground.
So I think that was a different case, because the polling, the American public swung so clearly against impeachment in Clinton's case.
In the moment,
that the history kind of wrote itself. In this case, all the numbers are sort of balanced on edge. You know, they're kind of, they could teeter this way or that. So I think, Perry, I'm curious what you think. I think 2020 will kind of tip it one way or the other.
Yeah, I think so. I was struck as CNN was saying, when I was watching CNN, there was a lot of focus on, you know, impeachment is a permanent stain on your record, no matter who you are. And in the world I live in, Bill Clinton was impeached and his wife was almost president, you know, 15 yeah. years later. So I found that a little bit, and it was, I don't think his impeachment came up really at all in her campaign. That wasn't one of her biggest problems. I don't think it was in 2016. So I don't know about that. I think the core question though is, I think that if you look back, I think the conventional view is like George W. Bush is one of the worst presidents of, you know, the last 30 or 40 years. And even though he won re-election, he left office with a very low approval rating. My guess is if Trump loses re-election, he'll leave office kind of in the 30s, high 30s probably, and he'll be impeached. And let's be honest, the media hates him. Historians hate him. The elite hates him. The Republicans who are on TV hate him, even though the Republicans, you know, voters like him. So I think if he is impeached and doesn't win re-election, he will be considered one of the worst presidents. That's my guess here. Without just thinking about it now, this impeachment is kind of a validation of what a lot of people in the media, in historians of the elite, think about him. And so I think this is a big event. But I think Mike is right. If he wins re-election, I don't know what this looks like, but I almost think it becomes like a symbol of, we had these great kind of quote unquote culture wars in this era. We had a black president. We had a backlash. We had a lot of controversial things that happened. The country was very divided. And I think it becomes a part of that broader narrative.
That yeah. seems dead on to me. If Trump wins re-election, I think because many of the people writing the history don't like Trump, I think Perry's absolutely right that it gets written as emblematic of the crazy divisions in the country. If he does win re-election, yeah.
Well, those are some really interesting points to end things on. So thank you so much, Micah. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Perry.
Thank you.
And thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Galen.
And before we go, I'll mention that we have a live show in D.C. on January 16th. We're headed to the swamp. I don't know. Am I allowed to make that joke? Anyway, we'll be there. go to 538.com/live for details and tickets. If everything goes according to plan, we have a couple pre-recorded holiday episodes for you during the next 2 weeks. We'll be on vacation. Actually, I'm literally headed out of this podcast studio straight to the airport.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Singapore. I'm
going to
be on a very long flight.
Jeez. I'm going home.
Anyway, yeah, I'm literally walking out the door and going to the airport right now. Tony's editing this podcast. And anyway, yes, we will have a couple pre-recorded holiday episodes for you during the next couple weeks, and then we'll be back live with you in the new year. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room, and like I said, he's also editing this podcast. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.